After discussing how much matzah we are supposed to be eating at the Seder, the next question to discuss is what kind of matzah we should be eating at the Seder. And this is the well-known question about whether matzahs that are made by a machine, or machine matzah for short, is kosher for the mitzvah of matzah. The discussion of machine matzah is focused on one question, which is whether you need a human being to give the matzah sanctity before it is eaten. This is the major question we're going to focus on in this discussion. A lot of the discussions of machine matzah raise a number of other factors, which are really extraneous or external factors, and not exactly should not exactly be our focus. Some people say that we can't have machine matzahs because they hurt the poor. Actually, today it's the reverse. Machine matzahs help the poor. There was a time that machine matzahs put the hand bakers out of business, so it hurt the poor people working in the hand baking. In this case, there are so many poor people who are of the view that they can't use machine matzahs that these Jews who are, at the poverty line, the financial cost to them to purchase hand matzah, machine matzah is better for the poor. Some of the conversations discuss it's more likely to become chametz if you use a machine. Maybe that was true once. Today, it's much more likely to become chametz if you do it by hand. A machine is incredibly clean, and it runs through the machine incredibly fast. It's much less likely that it's going to become chametz. There's discussions about the shape of the matzah, circle, square. That doesn't really seem to be a factor. The major factor here relates to imbuing a mitzvah object with sanctity. And the truth is that there is a lot of precedent that a mitzvah object in Judaism must be created with sanctity. Regarding the tzitzit, which is a mitzvah object, they have to be spun. The thread is spun for the sake of the mitzvah. They're dipped into the dye, the blue dye, for the sake of the mitzvah. When the leather that is used for the tefillin boxes or the straps or working the leather for a sefer Torah, that is also done lishma, for the sake of doing the mitzvah. So, in general, the creation of a mitzvah item has there is precedent that it must be done for the sake of the mitzvah. The problem is that I'm not sure that a matzah is a mitzvah object. Just because you use matzah for a mitzvah doesn't give it a special status of being a mitzvah object. I have a mitzvah to make kiddush, but the wine that I use for kiddush is not exactly a mitzvah object. It's just wine that I'm using for the mitzvah. I have a mitzvah to give charity. The money that I give to charity, the money doesn't. It's not a mitzvah object. Mitzvah objects like tzitzis or tefillin, and maybe a sukkah, are things that don't exist in the real world, outside of the fact that they are a mitzvah object. But matzah is a food. It's not a mitzvah object, it's a food. Tefillin is only one thing. It's a mitzvah object. That's its only use. But matzah has other uses as a food. Now, when one creates a sukkah does not need to be created for with imbued with sanctity when it was created. So for that reason, there's even more reason to doubt that this whole category should apply by mitzvah at all. Indeed, many of the mitzvot that are performed with a mitzvah object, you make a shachianu sometimes when you make the mitzvah object and sometimes when you do the mitzvah. So you make a shachianu the first time you wear a talit, you make a shachianu on the mitzvah when you use the mitzvah object of a sukkah, but when you eat matzah, there's no shachianu at all. And it would seem that the reason why there's no Shachianu on matzah is because the action of eating matzah is just eating food. It's not in some sort of objective criteria defined as being nothing besides the mitzvah, and that's why you can't get a Shachianu. But therefore, the idea that you need a human being to bake the matzah because you need to imbue it with sanctity and only a human being can do that would seem to not really apply in this case. Now, there is a Gemara in Psachim on Dav Lamed Chelamed Beis, which says that there's something going on, that the matzah needs to be made for the sake of the matzah. The Gemara says, Yachol yotzi adam chavasa b'chalas torah v'kikei nazir. I would have thought that a matzah that was made for the Beis HaMikdash you could use for your Seder. And the Gemara says it doesn't work. You need matzah mishtameres l'matzah. It has to be made for the sake of the mitzvah. Now, the problem with this is that the Gemara here says that you can't use matzah that was intended for something else. Okay, so you can't use matzah that was intended for something else. You can't have a competing purpose for the matzah. But let's say I had a machine bake matzah with no purpose. What would you say then? See, many of the authorities who say you can't use machine matzah say, look, the Gemara said that you have to intend when you're making it for the purpose of matzah. But actually, the Gemara never said that. The Gemara never said you have to intend for matzah as much as the Gemara said you can't intend to use it for something else. The Gemara has a concept of shmura matzah, that matzah has to be guarded for the sake of the matzah. But when you look at that Gemara, it's also not clear whether the Gemara is requiring a shmira, which is some sort of positive creation of a sanctity through the shmira, or whether shmira is just another way of saying making sure it doesn't become chametz. Again, some people said that you need to have a human being make matzah because if you weren't a human being, if there wasn't a human being there throughout the process, you're not guarding it and protecting it from becoming chametz. But I could disagree. Perhaps the idea of shmura, of watching the matzah, only means that you have to make sure that it doesn't become chametz. And if you knew it didn't become chametz because it was an automated process and that's how you knew, that would be sufficient. The way the Rambam says it is that some situations you have to be concerned that you can't eat the matzah. Shneamar, as it says, Ushmartem et hamatzos, you have to guard the matzah. Klomar, in other words, he's haru b'matzah, be careful with the matzah, v'shimru osa mikol tzad chimutz, and be careful that it doesn't become chametz. Therefore, the Rambam says, the Chachamim say, you have to be careful from the time that the matzah is harvested, time that the grain is harvested, that you have to be careful that it doesn't become chametz. For the Rambam, this whole concept of guarding the matzah and being shomer the matzah, it's not about imbuing the matzah with sanctity. After all, the matzah is not a mitzvah object that it needs to be imbued with sanctity. Instead, it's a totally different rule that it has to be protected from chametz. As long as I know that it's not becoming chametz, that's fine. There's no requirement to imbue it with sanctity. And the Rambam says, yes, if there's a competing intent of a korban, that would ruin the matzah. But if there's no competing intent and there's no intent for anything, but I know it didn't become chametz, that should be fine for the Rambam. There's no requirement for the matzah becoming shmura or anything more like that. Shulchan Aruch says, Hachitim she'osin behem matzos, tov l'shomran. Tov means it's a good idea. Namely, you should ideally guard them from when they are harvested to make sure that no water falls on them. And at the end of the day, if it wasn't guarded and you bought flour from the marketplace, as long as it clearly wasn't chametz and you guarded it from the time the flour and the water were together, that is sufficient. But what's interesting is the Mishnah Brura, who injects a totally different rationale, again, based on earlier authorities. But the Mishnah Berurah says, Shetzarach Shimur Yesera L'Shem Mitzvahs Matzah. Shetzarach Shimur L'Shem Matzah. The Mishnah Berurah is describing a halachic category which did not appear in the Talmud. The Talmud said two things. Number one, that you have to know it's not chametz. And number two, you can't intend it for something else. But the Mishnah Berurah strengthens that and says, you need to intend it, you need to guard it for the sake of being matzah. If you are a quality control inspector and you are guarding it for the sake of quality control, it's not good enough. You have to guard it for the sake of matzah. The Mishnah Berurah is consistent in his insistence about this, that you have to positively create this, guarding it for the sake of the mitzvah. The Mishnah Berurah says that if a child is making matzah, it doesn't work because they don't have this intent. There needs to be a positive intent for the sake of the mitzvah. So, to summarize where we are right now, there's one requirement to have no intention to make matzah for another mitzvah, the competing intent, intending it for the Beis HaMikdash or something. In the case of machine matzah, this isn't an issue. That has been fulfilled because the machine matzah is never intended for another korban or anything like that. There's also an instrumental guarding of the matzah, making super sure there's no chametz. But again, machine matzah achieves that goal as well because there's a mashgiach there who knows that it's not becoming chametz. The only way that somebody would invalidate machine matzah is if you were of the view that there was a creative requirement to imbue the mitzvah object with sanctity, and that had to be done by a human being and not by a machine. I'll ask as an aside, people who are against machine matzah, who say that you need to create a positive intent to be a mitzvah object, are we sure that everybody involved in the matzah process has in mind this idea of intending for the mitzvah? I mean, sure, if you were to visit a matzah factory and everybody in the matzah factory were to be an observant Jew, and every one of them has in mind that I, in a spiritual, supernatural, metaphysical way, by kneading this dough, by forming this crispy crust, I am creating matzah of a mitzvah, then you might argue that the people making the matzah are imbuing it with sanctity. I only visited a matzah factory twice in my life. I visited a matzah factory in the 1990s in New Square. And in that matzah factory, everybody involved in the matzah making was observant. And you could see on their faces that they had in mind this higher idea of creating the sanctity. And by creating the sanctity, they were imbuing the matzah with this amazing specialness. I also visited a matzah factory in Brooklyn in 2006. And when I visited that matzah factory in 2006, there were a lot of people there who were involved who didn't seem to be observant. They were Jewish, but they weren't observant. And if you really believe that you had to create sanctity in the matzah, you might say that the people who are doing it have to be observant as well. Now, even if there is a requirement to create this sanctity, there's another layer of all this, and that is whether pushing the button works. Because even a machine is engineered or begun by a particular person. Rabbi Avadya Yosef in Yechava Das discusses this, and he says, listen, when the person is pushing the button, and he says, L'shem matzah mitzvah, I am starting this entire process for the sake of the matzah of the mitzvah, that only impacts the first stage of the pushing of the button. Because everything else is automated, he's not imbuing this lishma. However, you could disagree, and you could say, not that way. That since he pushed the button and he started the entire process, then he can imbue it with the sanctity. Rav Avi Yosef ends by saying that mitzvah min hamuvchar, the ideal thing, it should be avodas yad, that it was done by hand. Shenazis bidei anashim yirei shamayim, that the people who made it were people who feared heaven. If you're going to, at least for the first night, you should do that. For the rest of the days, he thinks machine matzah might be okay. A possible parallel to this idea of pushing the button, which is raised by the Chazon Ish, is that when we write a Jewish divorce, it has to be done also lishma, for the sake of a particular couple. And when the divorce begins to be written, everybody says that they're doing it for the sake of the particular couple and for the sake of the mitzvah. But they do it at the beginning of the process. They don't repeat it every second. In a matzah factory, every minute, they say again, I'm doing this for the sake of the mitzvah, to imbue it with sanctity. And if that were true, that every minute you had to sort of restate that you were doing this for the sake of the mitzvah, then we might argue that it did not apply in the case of machine matzah. However, in the case of a divorce, they don't say it every minute. They do it once at the beginning. And if once at the beginning is sufficient, then when you made a matzah in a machine, that would be enough to create a sufficient amount of lishma, a sufficient amount of sanctity. I think that a way to sort of summarize this and to look at the decision-making tree is to ask the following set of questions. If pushing the button counts, then it's kosher because I pushed the button and I did everything I needed to do. Even if pushing the button doesn't count, the more you see this idea of guarding the matzah to be localized, not in the baker, but in the mashgiach, because the language the Gemara used to know that you have to have this matzah in mind from the beginning was ushmartem, to guard the matzah, then it's kosher anyway. It's kosher because even if the button pusher didn't count, the shomer, who's watching the whole array, counts and he has in mind. There's a third question, which is maybe you don't need to imbue it with sanctity, and as long as you know that it's not chametz, it's kosher. Machine matzah would be kosher if any of those three questions are answered correctly. Once I say pushing the button counts, then machine matzah is kosher no matter what, no matter how you answer the other questions. If I say that the shomer, the mashgiach, is the one who provides the sanctity, not the baker, then it doesn't matter how I answer the other questions. And if I say that the matzah has to be guarded instrumentally, namely I have to know that it's not chametz, but I don't have to actually imbue it with sanctity, then it's also kosher no matter what. The only way machine matzah would be problematic is A, if I need to create sanctity, and it's not enough just to know it isn't chametz, and B, that it has to be created not by the mashgiach, it has to be created by a human being who is actively involved at the time of the process, and C, pushing the button doesn't count. Only in those situations would you have a problem with machine matzah. But if you did say that, you would also have a problem with hand matzah if the people making the matzah itself were not observant and did not have in mind to create the sanctity. Rav Shlomo Kluger, in his discussion of this topic, says, "Anan kai malan she'en yotzin afilu be'asal chereisho teva katan." Look, we said that a child can't do it. V'Yisrael omid al gamav lamin lo mahani. And we said that an adult standing there while they do it is not enough, because the Jew standing there is not able to provide the intent for them. V'yim kein, machine zeh lo adif mi'asiyah mi'masa katan. A machine is no better than a child. Well, Shlomo Kluger is answering these questions by saying that A, you do need intent. B, not only do you need the intent, but it has to be done by the actual kneader and the actual baker. It doesn't have to be, it cannot be provided by somebody else. But even if Shlomo Kluger, of course, and his proof about a child doesn't elucidate the question about the button pushing, because it's still the case that if you said that pushing the button counts as imbuing intent, even if Shlomo Kluger would be forced to agree. Now, he's saying that the button pushing doesn't count. Many people disagreed with that point. Many people say, what do you mean? The machine doesn't operate by itself. One authority says, Hamashin nasa yidei kishuv? Is the machine magical? No, it's not magical. And therefore, the human being who pushes the button counts. In the early machine matzahs, there were many more human beings involved. The machine didn't involve electricity. It was hand-turned. It was a simple machine. You could argue that in the old machine matzahs, you were able to use them because human beings were more involved. And today, where you're pushing the button, it's a little bit different because the human act is much less connected than it used to be. However, Shlomo Kluger's view that it's a problem if a child needs the matzah is also not found in the Talmud. That's also something which comes a little bit later. The Rashba, in a responsa, says, Lo matzasi b'shum makom she'asu lalu cher she'otu v'katan. The question asked the Rashba, where did this idea come from that a child can't make the matzah? Essentially, what we're saying is that Shlomo Kluger is bringing a proof from the fact that a child can't produce the matzah, but maybe a child can produce the matzah. When all the dust settles, the Aruch HaShulchan sort of summarizes and says that there might be a requirement to have this special kind of shmura matzah on the first night of the Seder, but not for the entire 8 days of Pesach. And his point is that if you required shmura matzah for the 8 days of Pesach, then you don't actually need shmura matzah for the sake of the mitzvah. The same rabbis who say you need shmura matzah for all 8 days of Pesach are the rabbis who say that the matzah is being guarded just to not be chametz. But that kind of low-level guarding, we said, is already achieved by machine matzah. The rabbis who said that you need the special kind of sanctity for the mitzvah are only applying that for the first night of the Seder, because that's the only time that you have this positive mitzvah. But for the rest of the Seder, the rest of the 8 days of Pesach, for sure, the shmur matzah of this hand done would not be a requirement according to this opinion. To summarize, when you look at the Talmud, you get the impression that matzah does not need to be created with special sanctity. You don't get that impression from the Talmud. Yes, you can't prepare matzah for another mitzvah. And yes, you do need somebody present or 100% aware that it's not going to become chametz. But the Talmud doesn't seem to be saying that a human being needs to create the matzah with an intent to imbue it with sanctity for the sake of the mitzvah. Yet many authorities are stringent and say that that is a factor, either because of this later halakha that a child can't make it. Well, why can a child not make it? It must be because it has to be imbued with sanctity, or because the way they read the Gemara, which the Gemara says that you need a positive ushmartim es hamatzos, the way they read the Gemara was to say that it does require a human being there to create sanctity. Now, even if a human being needs to be there, we could still argue that machine matzah works because pushing the button achieves that. Or we could argue that hand matzah isn't good enough. If the people making the hand matzah are not observant, it might be that they're no better than machine matzah. But I think the minhag of many families is to use shmura matzah at the Seder, because they're basically saying, A, you need to imbue it with sanctity. B, a human being needs to do that directly. It can't be by watching. It has to be directly by doing. And C, the button is not enough. Some people say that's not required, and therefore other families don't do that at the Seder. And they say either the button is enough to imbue it with sanctity, or they say watching it is enough to imbue it with sanctity, or that imbuing it with sanctity isn't required as long as you know for sure that it's chametz. And so this debate about machine matzah is likely to continue to, argue on, but these are just some of the factors that are involved in the question.